Thank you very much, Christy. I am Lillian, one of the IASB staff working on the conceptual framework project. With me are Christy Robinson and Amy Bannister, both fellow team members on the conceptual framework project. Today, we are going to talk to you about the presentation and disclosure principles that are suggested in a discussion paper to improve the conceptual framework. Before we start, there are a few housekeeping matters for you to bear in mind. These are summarized in slide 2. There are 2 points we would particularly like to draw your attention to. First, about questions. Later in this webcast, we will be answering questions that you submit to us. We may get more questions than we can answer in the time available, in which case we will try to address the main themes that we think will be of interest to most people. You can submit a question at any time during the webcast. Just type your question in the text box on your screen and click submit. And secondly, especially when we are answering questions later, please remember that the views that are expressed during this webcast are our own. They are not necessarily shared by board members or other staff of the ISB. The official position of the ISB is explained in the discussion paper of the proposals that was published last month. I'll start by giving everybody a project overview on what the ISB is hoping to achieve as a whole. Slide 3 sets out the main points. The ISB is not seeking to fundamentally rewrite its conceptual framework. We think that the existing framework generally works well and don't intend to rip it apart and start again. Instead, we made a list of specific areas where weaknesses in the existing framework are giving rise to significant problems in practice, and we are hoping to strengthen the framework in these areas, filling in the gaps and improving and updating some guidance. We are at a relatively early stage in the process. So far, we've set up some preliminary views in a discussion paper and are seeking your comments by 14th of January 2014. Our preliminary views are likely to change in the light of the comments we receive. And even when we reach final decisions and make changes to the framework, these changes won't necessarily change existing practices. The new framework will not override existing IFRSs, and any decision to amend an IFRS as a consequence of changes to the framework will need to be a separate project involving the ISB's usual consultation process. I'll now pass on to Christy, who will give an overview of today's session.
Okay. Thanks, Lily. So we're now on slide 4. So this gives you an overview of today's presentation, and what we will firstly look at is to describe and explain the concepts in the discussion paper, in the conceptual framework discussion paper on presentation and disclosure, and that's section 7. And as Lily said, that when we were looking at dealing with the conceptual framework, we looked at specific problems and where there are gaps. So this is an area where there is nothing currently in the conceptual framework, so we've written a chapter effectively trying to describe what we would put in the conceptual framework regarding presentation and disclosure. So what we will cover is what we've described as the difference between presentation and disclosure, an overview of the primary financial statements, the notes to the financial statement, so their scope and their objective, and the form of disclosure and presentation requirements. And as Lily mentioned, we'll leave some time for questions at the end of that discussion. So if I move to slide 5, what do we mean when we use the terms disclosure and presentation? The discussion paper deals with this and says that disclosure is the process of providing useful financial information about the reporting entity to users. And presentation is the disclosure of financial information on the face of an entity's primary financial statements. So therefore, disclosure isn't a term which is specific to the notes to the financial statements. It deals with the entire financial statements. And presentation is a specific subset of that form of disclosure, i.e. it's the disclosure in amounts and descriptions that we put on the face of the primary financial statements. So then that leads me to slide six, I think. Yeah, six. What are the primary financial statements? And the discussion paper identifies these as the statement of financial position, the statement of profit and loss and other comprehensive income, or if you present that as two statements, the statement of profit and loss and the statement of comprehensive income, the statement of changes in equity, and the statement of cash flows. Now, we've used the term primary, but I think you could also use the term summary when in describing what these financial statements are. But we use the term primary because that's how what we commonly use. I think it also infers that these summary or primary financial statements are the starting point generally of an analysis of the of an entity. So it gives you that entry point into the financial statements as a whole. But it doesn't infer that the information in the notes or some sort of hierarchy, or there exists a hierarchy of those primary financial statements. The financial statements, the primaries, and the notes should be looked at together. So if I move to slide 7, and the discussion paper tries to set out what the objective of the primary financial statements are, and that is, in effect, to provide summarised information about recognised assets, liabilities, equity, income, expenses, changes in equity and cash flows that have been classified and aggregated in a manner that's useful to users of financial statements in making decisions about providing resources to the entity. So there's a few key terms there, you know, summarised information. They're recognised items that have been classified and aggregated in a way to make the information about the entity useful and understandable. So if I move to slide 8, there's a bit more discussion here about classification and aggregation, and that's how we effectively create the summary in the primary financial statements. So classification being the sorting of items and recognised items based on shared qualities, which are then aggregated, so added together. Individual items are added together within those classifications. And that effectively, the end of that aggregation and classification process is the presentation on the face of primary financial statements in line items as an amount and a description, which sort of details what that line item represents. The board, in some cases, may require certain line items. But generally, I think those line items will reflect the nature and what is relevant to that entity. And in some cases, I think when we were talking about presentation and disclosure, there's a fine line between what is presented on the face of the financial statements and what is presented or described in the notes. And that deals a lot with the nature of the entity itself. So if I move to slide 9, the discussion paper also deals with offsetting at a high level. And in effect, offsetting, which is the aggregating of dissimilar items, is the end product or the sort of line at the end of the aggregation classification process, and describes when the board should consider preventing or stopping that aggregation process. And effectively, the discussion paper says that offsetting will generally not provide the most useful information because it does combine dissimilar items. That is, you might offset assets against liabilities, income and expenses, and cash, and offset cash receipts and cash payments. But the board and the discussion paper does recognise that it may choose to require offsetting when it does provide faithful representation, or it may be necessary on cost-benefit grounds. And we've seen that in the context of revenue recognition and other specific standards. So far in the previous slides, if I move to slide 10, we've been discussing the primary financial statements and presentation in those statements. The section in the discussion paper also goes on to discuss the objective and scope of the notes to the financial statements. So the notes are there to supplement the primary financial statements by providing additional information about the assets and liabilities and other elements that are presented in those financial statements, and also those that are not presented or recognised within those primary financial statements. Those notes should also give you some information about how efficiently and effectively the entity is managed, the entity's management have discharged their responsibility to use those entity's resources. So there should be some notion of disclosure about how, you know, the stewardship notion of how the entity or the management has looked after the entity's assets or used them. The section also deals with the scope of the notes to the financial statements, and really here we're pushing on what is the boundary between the financial statements and the remainder of the financial report. And it says that it deals with two issues. One is forward-looking information, so information about the future, and also what sort of information should be described in the notes. In terms of forward-looking information, financial statements primarily deal with information about past and existing events. But forward-looking information generally would not be relevant to that description, but sometimes it will be, and the discussion paper does indicate that it would be relevant and should be included in the financial statement where it provides information about those existing assets or liabilities or transactions that are represented in the financial statements. For example, you know, in fair value measurement, you will need to consider and incorporate information about expectations about future cash flows in order to create or to present or measure a financial asset or liability. So therefore, that is providing information or forward-looking information. So the discussion paper gives some indication of when that might be useful and not. So if I move to slide 11, here we talk about a bit more about the scope of the notes to the financial statements. And the discussion paper indicates that the information in the note should cover certain types of information, and that's in the first column on the left-hand side in slide 11. So the type of information that you would generally want to see in the notes is the information about the reporting entity. So, you know, if it's got is it a parent, has it got subsidiaries, maybe a bit about the business model. You also may want to see information which sort of goes into more detail about the amounts that are recognised and summarised in the primary financial statements. So here you would see a description or a disaggregation of line items in those primary financial statements and a bit more about the relationship between perhaps line items. The note should also cover information about certain unrecognised assets or liabilities. So they're assets or liabilities of the entity, but which for what some reason are not recognised, whether that's because they have failed, you know, generally because they haven't met the recognition criteria. But there may be certain exposures or risks that are coming out of those assets which might need to be identified and then described. So looking at the next line item or type of information that you would think should be included in the notes to the financial statements, we would expect to see some discussion about the risks related to the assets and liabilities and transactions of the entity. And also, finally, we want to see information about the methods, assumptions and judgments used in order to, in particular, measure or to recognise your existing assets, liabilities, etc. And there you'd notably find some information about that in the accounting policies or when you have to describe alternative measures. So if I move then to slide 12, which is another aspect which is dealt with in, well, actually is currently dealt with in the conceptual framework, which is materiality. And currently the conceptual framework has a description or a definition of materiality which broadly says that an item is material if omitting or misstating it could influence a user's investment decision. The ISB's preliminary view in the discussion paper is that the concept of materiality is clearly described in the conceptual framework and would not seek to amend or add anything to that description as part of this discussion paper process. However, the board is of the view that there might be some difficulties in applying that concept and is looking at how it might develop some standards level material to address some of those application concerns. Now, that Amy's, I think, going to touch a bit more about that in the later part of this presentation. But on that point, I'd hand over to Amy to maybe describe a bit about the form of disclosure and presentation requirements.
Yes, thank you, Christy. So slide 13, as Christy said, is about the, it shows some principles for the form of disclosure and presentation requirements which were proposed in the discussion paper. So starting with the first box, the discussion paper suggests that each standard that proposes disclosure and presentation requirements should have a clear objective which should guide entities when identifying the best disclosures and presentation to meet that objective. A disclosure objective is something that we've seen being used more frequently in recent standards, such as in IFRS 12 on disclosures of interests in other entities. The second box here is about financial statements in an electronic format, and the discussion paper suggests that when developing presentation and disclosure requirements, the ISB may need to consider the impact of technology. For example, possibly considering flexibility in the order and level of aggregation and the consistent use of terminology, totals and subtotals in order to aid that information being faithfully represented in an electronic format. And the last box here is about communication principles. Now, the DP suggests that because the objective of financial reporting is to provide useful financial information to users, disclosures in the financial statements should be a form of communication rather than solely compliance. And the discussion paper proposes some communication principles that the ISB should consider, and we go over these on slide 14. So the first principle proposed is that disclosure guidance should seek to promote the disclosure of entity-specific useful information, i.e. It should enhance a user's understanding of the entity. And this therefore leads to discouraging boilerplate information or generally available information because it impairs that understandability. The second principle proposed is that disclosure guidance should result in disclosures that are clear, balanced, and understandable. Sorry. And the third principle proposed is that the disclosure guidance should enable an entity to organise their disclosures to highlight important information. So therefore, where possible, disclosure guidance should enable an entity to determine the order of the disclosures or the emphasis within a single disclosure. The fourth principle proposed results from the idea that disclosures should be linked, and therefore disclosure guidance should result in disclosures that help users of financial statements to understand the relationships between the items in the primary financial statements and the notes. And this principle goes on to suggest that where appropriate, disclosure guidance should require or permit entities to show that relationship and where possible with other published information, for example, disclosures in management commentary. And therefore, IFRSs should permit the use of cross-referencing where appropriate and possible. The fifth principle here is that disclosure guidance should not result in the duplication of the same information in different parts of the financial statements. And therefore, the ISB should review existing IFRSs when developing new disclosure guidance to minimise any duplication. The sixth and the last communication principle we've got here is that disclosure guidance should seek to optimise comparability without compromising the usefulness of the information disclosed. So this is that when the ISB develops disclosure guidance, it needs to assess the need for information to be comparable among entities and across reporting periods against the need to give entities the flexibility to determine what and how information is disclosed in the most understandable manner. So this assessment will determine whether standards permit or require disclosures and whether standards require a form for the disclosure, for example, a tabular format. So that's the communication principles. And on the next slide, slide 15, we just wanted to highlight the interaction between the conceptual framework and another project that the ISB are working on, the Disclosure Initiative. So the Disclosure Initiative is a number of projects at a standards level which look at disclosure. Two of the projects are short-term. One is looking at amendments to IS1, Presentation of Financial Statements, and the other is looking at assessing the existing guidance on materiality. And there are also two medium-term projects. One of these is looking, well, they're both research projects. One is looking at IS1, IS7, which is the statement of cash flows, and IS8, accounting policies, changes in accounting estimates and errors, looking at replacing those standards. Another medium-term project, again a research project, is to review the existing disclosures in standards holistically and systematically in light of the work undertaken on the conceptual framework and that project looking at IS 1, 7 and 8. The work on presentation disclosure in the conceptual framework and the disclosure initiative does have some overlap. We've got those on this slide. There's overlap with materiality, the objective of the notes of the financial statements, communication principles and the form of disclosure requirements. And we're thinking that these projects will work in parallel with each other, but also informing the work on each project. I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. So I'll hand over to Lily now, who's going to go through some of your questions.
Thank you. We've received some questions during the presentation. I'll start off with this one here. How does what the ISB has done on presentation and disclosure in the conceptual framework help with the disclosure overload problem that that everybody seems to be talking about recently?
Maybe I'll take that one, Neely. I think it helps in some ways. I think, firstly, the disclosure problem, just to give some context, we've done some work on that, and I would just be wanting to say that the disclosure problem is not necessarily just disclosure overload, and I think that part of the problem with disclosures is that they're not being as effective as they could be. So there's many aspects to that, disclosure overload, but also communication or compliance rather than communication, as well as actually maybe some of the right information not being disclosed. But if we think about that problem broadly, then I would see the conceptual framework as being that first step in trying to address that problem. And the thing that the conceptual framework will do would be to set some high-level objectives and principles, which should then dictate how the ISB, or you know, give a framework for the ISB when it sets disclosure requirements in standards, and give some framework which has been missing. We said earlier that the conceptual framework is currently missing some things, and disclosure and presentation is one of those things. So I think at the highest level, this will set that framework. I also then think that that will then feed down into the way that the ISB sets standards, which perhaps could be more defined and perhaps more clear in their objectives, and sort of give some construct for the way that we actually do write those standards, which I think would contribute positively to addressing that problem. I think there's a lot more work to be done, though, and as Amy indicated, we do have another initiative, or the Disclosure Initiative, which is going to look at what we can do at a more practical, lower level to deal with what we see as some aspects or other aspects of the disclosure problem.
Okay, I have another question. One of the listeners noted that some of the disclosure principles that the ISB had suggested in a discussion forum looks very similar to some of the proposals that the integrated reporting are thinking about. What's our reaction to that?
I'll take this one again, Lily. I think one of the things to note about this project is it deals with financial statements, and we've looked primarily at the information that should be contained in financial statements. I think integrated reporting is broader than just financial statements, and how do you bring information from many areas together into the financial report. So to some extent, I think we haven't specifically dealt with integrative reporting, but primarily looked at what we put into financial statements themselves. That said, if I look at the broader disclosure initiative and some of the thinking that we're doing here internally is what do we, how can we think about that broader nature of financial reporting, and that's some of the things I think at an advisory council strategic level we will think about.
Okay, so that sounds quite interesting, because that means that what we have to think about, we have to relate to management commentary, we have to think about what happens in managed commentary and how it relates to what the current thinking in the discussion paper.
Yeah, I think the in the discussion paper we are dealing with financial statements. That's the scope of the project. But there is a lot of thinking being done. I know the FRC here in the UK has done some thinking about management commentary and what do you put in the broader context of financial reporting, and integrated reporting is an aspect of that as well, which we have in mind, but it's somewhat related but outside the scope of this project.
Okay. Is there any intention to restart the financial statement presentation project?
So the financial statement presentation project was stopped a few years ago and was a standards level project. Some of the thinking in that project, I think, has been brought into the discussion paper in the presentation disclosure section, and we're also using some of that thinking in the disclosure initiative as talked about. As I said, it's standards level. The conceptual framework been identified primarily for the ISB, and currently the ISB does not have anything on its agenda to restart that project.
Okay. Sounds like we're running out of time.
No, I think we've got
a little bit more.
Yeah, given our technical difficulties.
Well, okay, that's the case. We have one more question to answer.
Yeah.
This person's asked if the ISB is intending to update its chapter, some of its conceptual framework, to change its focus on its users.
To focus on users?
On who are the users of the financial reports or financial statements?
The definition of a user of financial statements is described in the QC chapter, so chapter 3 of the existing conceptual framework.
In chapter 1.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I know there is a description of it anyway in chapter 3.
It is?
Yeah. I suppose the same answer applies to Chapter 1 and 3. When the board, when we released this discussion paper, we envisaged that we would not be amending or reopening Chapters 1 and 3. So therefore, unless something was particularly necessary, we wouldn't re-look to address or change that notion of a user, because it is something that the board discussed recently and that we felt was, we had agreement, I think it was in 2010. Having said that, I think there is some, work that we're looking at doing in the context of materiality, for example, as to describing, what sort of user you might want to think about in the context of materiality, because materiality in effect requires a preparer to put themselves in the shoes of a user. So in order to apply materiality, there may be some sort of broader information about what to consider about that user could be useful. But again, that's outside the conceptual framework. In terms of the conceptual framework, I would say we're not going to go into that description of a user.
Okay, so looks like we've run out of time. The conceptual framework team has put out some, we also have a fair bit of other information that you can find about the conceptual framework. You can find them on our website. It's all listed out on slide 17. We've also done a couple of other webcasts on the other topics on the conceptual framework, for example, the definitions and profit and loss and OCI. So please go to our website if you want to know more about that information. Thank you for listening today. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Christy. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.